What's up, Breakthrough Success? Mark Berti here. And if you have ever experienced any kind of addiction, or if it's something you are going through now, or if you know someone who's experiencing it, this is going to be a great interview for you, because we're interviewing a guest who has not only overcome addiction, but also helps people do that and kind of gives us a perspective on what the whole family unit is going through when there is someone in the family who is addicted. So a little more info on our special guest. He, after overcoming his battle with addiction, decided to begin a career in the field of substance abuse treatment. He wrote the book, I Love You More, to offer that perspective we talked about on family members who they have one of their own who has an addiction. So for people who are wondering, how can we get out of an addiction, or how can we just get out of a bad habit? This is going to be great for you. So our guest for this episode is none other than Blake Cohen. Blake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, brother. I appreciate it.
Blake, I'm so happy to have you on Breakthrough Success. And I feel like addiction, I mean, it is something that a lot of people have dealt with in some way. So I'm wondering if you could share a little bit on your story, how you're able to overcome it.
Yeah, sure. So I'm going to try to keep it relatively short, because my story goes on for quite a while. But basically, from an early age, I always kind of felt like that cliche feeling of I didn't belong. And I developed these poor coping mechanisms of how to feel a part of, and how to deal with life. And I learned how to escape myself. And it was once I found drugs and alcohol like a rocket ship, I kind of like skyrocketed into this whole place of really escaping these feelings of inadequacy and low self-worth and self-value. And it just kind of clicked with me right away. And one thing led to another. And I think, eventually I found myself addicted to opiates and opiate pain medication.
Wow.
And I knew that I liked them early on. I remember giving my mom, when I was 15 or something like that, my mom was like, here, you could finally take your own pain medication after I had a wrist surgery. And I had never experienced pain medication before that. I didn't really know what it felt like, but I ended up taking that whole bottle in one night because it felt so good. And it was one of those, it was almost an innocent thing where I didn't even realize what I was doing. It just felt good. So I took more. So I ended up finishing that bottle in one night and then going to my mom the next day and being like saying, Mom, I finished that bottle. I was in a lot of pain, not realizing even then I was lying to protect my using, because I wasn't in pain. It just felt good to take these pills. So my mom goes, oh, well, innocently enough goes, oh, well, let me call the doctor. Let's get you another script. And I got another script that day and finished that next script that same night again. So I had a taste of it. I knew that it should have been a warning sign for me to stay away from those things, that they're going to be dangerous for me. But eventually I found my way towards them in college and became really heavily addicted to pain pills. Wow. Really started to develop all the behaviors that are associated that people stereotype with addicts. You know, a lot of them are true. I went against my inner core beliefs and started stealing and lying and manipulating and doing whatever I had to do to support my habit. And it wasn't coming from a sense of that I was a bad person. It wasn't coming from that place. It was just my brain was basically hijacked by these drugs, and it was telling me that I needed these drugs to survive. And once you understand the intricacies of addiction and how it affects your brain, it makes a lot of sense what I'm saying, that your brain is hijacked and your brain does believe it needs these drugs to release crucial neurotransmitters in your brain. So, you know, I went to jail. I'm from a nice family in Boca Raton, Florida. Like, we don't go to jail. And I'm living proof that no matter what family you come from, no matter what your background is, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't discriminate. And I, you know, I went to jail, went to treatment a few times. And the reason I wrote the book, and is the same reason that I got sober. when I realized for me that I was badly and seriously affecting my family, and that they weren't just pretending to be affected by my use. I thought that they didn't like it, that they were bothered by it because they know it's bad. So, and that they didn't, how could their son be an addict? You know, how could this, my son would never be an addict. Look at where we come from. Look at the house that we live in. So it's what I felt like that they were thinking. I didn't realize that I was actually really hurting my family. And I'd learned that when my dad, they left me in treatment. And my dad basically told me, can I curse on here? Okay, so I won't. So I'm just making sure before I go there. So my dad basically told me that you are a piece of S. We want nothing to do with you and good luck finding your way home. And for my dad to be that hurt and willing to just basically say we're done with you and write me off.
Wow, yeah.
It was like, oh my God, like what have I done? And I didn't realize that I was really hurting them. I thought I was just hurting myself. Addiction is a very selfish disease. And I thought it was just affecting me and it was all about me. And I didn't realize that my use and my behaviors were kind of like waves affecting everybody around me. And that was what motivated me to start taking recovery seriously and to start making some serious life changes and be vulnerable enough to say, okay, seriously, I need help now. What do I got to do? I have no idea what I'm doing. How do I get better? And, you know, I did treatment for 90 days and I stayed in treatment for a year. I still go to community support groups still to this day. That was New Year's Eve, 2012 was my sober date. So, December 31st, 2012. So it's been about 6.5 years now. And I still go to community support groups. I'm still actively involved in my recovery. And it's been awesome, man. Like the amount of stuff that I've accomplished since I'm 32 now, since I turned 25 till now, is just, it's crazy. It's crazy. And it's all because I was willing to be vulnerable and be open to the outside world and say, hey, I'm lost. I need help. And it really showed me that there's a real power and courage in that. And that a lot of good things come from asking for help. And from not wearing a mask and trying to pretend like everything's okay and being your authentic self.
Wow. I mean, it takes a lot of, like, you gotta be really vulnerable to share a story like that and to really look at yourself. Like, especially with like an addiction, like the whole point of it is to like not look at yourself, but then being able to look at yourself. And I feel like the big turnaround for Blake was when he realized that this was affecting other people. This was affecting people he cared about. So if you could attach it to people you care about, like family and friends, whether it's a big goal for business or just like in Blake's case, like, you know, like getting out of an addiction, like if you attach it to some meaning that's deeper than yourself and how there are real consequences for you to do something or not do something, it could really make a big difference in that path to cover. I speak as someone who is like not done any of that kind of stuff. Like, so I just want listeners to understand my perspective on this issue, but I definitely feel like Blake has shared a lot with us already and definitely has more to give.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate your perspective and relating it to other things besides just addiction problems, because it really is just, addiction is just one of many issues that we face as a human race, that we just, it's just one coping mechanism that we use to not have to deal with the real world and not have to deal with our pain and our hurt that we're dealing with, that we're often too embarrassed and too filled with shame to get help for.
Right. And you bring up a really great point. Because it's not like people are born. It's like someday, like I want to be addicted. Like that's not what people are saying, but it happens and it is a coping mechanism. So
yeah,
that there is a root cause that if you kill off that root, there's no reason for the addiction. So I'm wondering if you could share with us, like, how can we just like deal with it? How can we like address that root? Because I feel like it's great for getting through addiction. It's great for shattering a bad habit. So How do we just like face that root in the eye and just deal with it instead of just pushing it off?
So I think there's a lot of different answers to that. And I think it really depends on the, every person's a little bit different. You know, in my opinion, the root cause, whether it is depression, anxiety, other mental disorders, obesity, video game addiction, drug addiction, I don't care what it is. I bring it back. I think the root cause is us looking to escape how we're currently feeling. So, and a lot of those times, the way that we're currently feeling is based on a lack of connectivity, a lack of feeling connected to other people, which a lot of our times, our self-worth is based on how connected we are with other people, that we have a sense of belonging, we feel safe, if that makes any sense. So when we don't feel safe and we don't have a sense of belonging, it's hard, it's unbearable. So our brain automatically looks for ways to escape that. So, and it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. So I think the way to deal with that, first of all, is admitting that you have a problem. And, you know, it's step one, you know, in the 12-step model, but admitting that there's something wrong and not being afraid to rely on other people to help you. You know, we talk about courage, and I don't know anybody who's can be considered courageous that hasn't admitted that they have a problem, that hasn't been vulnerable and hasn't put themselves out there. And I think as a result of that courage, you end up building real self-esteem. And which once you have a sense of self-worth and self-love and self-value, you no longer need these outside things right. to feel whole.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it is just there to fill a hole, and you do have to build your self-worth. I mean, I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about your personal journey of building that self-worth, because, I mean, you shared your low point with us when you were like, I got to change. So how did you fill in that hole for you personally?
You know what? It's interesting because it wasn't like it was something that's happened overnight, and there's still, I would say, like I'm still filling that hole. And I feel like maybe that's normal. I think we're all always trying to fill that void inside of us. I think that how I've gotten better is, first of all, over time, is through a lot of effort, is through relying on others, like I said, of relying on therapists, relying on mentorship, relying on other people to help guide me, and being rigorously honest when I need to be, that when I'm struggling, I'm not afraid to admit it. I would say what makes me feel the most confident, though, is the times that I've put myself out there professionally or creatively. So something like the book has given me a ton of self-esteem and self-worth. And not because people like the book. I felt this self-esteem that I feel today because of the book. The book came out about a month ago, I think. Exactly, actually, today. Or maybe a couple of days prior. Doesn't matter. So I told you, it was a long day. So the moment that I hit enter to put that book on Amazon, and the moment it was live and I had this finished product in my hand, I was so proud of myself before anybody's even read the book. Because the fact that I was able to sit down and take the time to put my heart into something. And when I started writing the book, I was in a bad place because I had just switched jobs. I was feeling very inadequate. I was in a new position, was questioning my abilities, questioning myself, was just feeling very uncomfortable with myself. And I know what to do with those feelings now. Instead of sitting in them and having a little pity party and just being like, oh, I'm sad, I don't feel good. Instead of doing that, which I did for a little while, I decided to let's do something about it and let's lean into this pain and let's be vulnerable even more. Because at the end of every time I've ever been vulnerable and put myself out there, whether it's making funny videos for Facebook or making videos on social media, whatever I'm doing, to put myself out there, hosting a radio show, even though I have no idea how to host a radio show, which I did for a while. At the end of every time I've done something like that, something greater has happened for me in my life. And a lot of that is more spiritual. It's not like I came into a ton of money from any of these things, but it's at the end of it, I felt better and more confident about who I am and about the message and the person that I try to portray to the world and my core beliefs. I'm coming closer and closer to my core beliefs.
Yeah, and just spreading that message and knowing that it's helping people can really, it's definitely uplifting, like whether it's a small comment or whether it's just a like or something like that, it can make a difference. Yeah.
And you know what I'll say too, and I think a lot of the confidence comes from when we do things, what are our intentions? And if our intention is based in ego and our intention is based to make ourselves feel better and to be all about us, then I think we are building a false sense of pride. It's not real self-esteem. It's just because it just means we're looking for admiration. We're looking for praise from the outside world. Something like the book, I think I felt so fulfilled from because it wasn't my story. It wasn't about me. It was about trying to help families understand each other better.
And you could tell Blake is being like real with us. I mean, like this is a guy who's like, he's gone through struggles. He just wants to help people who maybe going through struggles. So, I mean, you could definitely tell.
Dude, it's so cool, man. And I said this before we started recording. Like, I'm so blessed that there's so many good things that have happened for me. And I'm in such a great place. And it really is a direct result of putting in effort and hard work and seeing things through to the end and putting myself out there.
Now, one of the things we have been talking about is, you know, how like you got to fill in the hole. People do drugs. And it's a really big, bad habit that like you hear about that a lot. People say they have to like get over a habit, usually an addiction. So I'm wondering if you could share with us to reverse that a bit. Like, can you share with us some of your habits you would say have been essential for your success?
It's funny because I think that my habits, there's a core few habits that I would say that I continue to do. And that's one, staying heavily involved in my recovery, whatever that, you know, putting my recovery first. So staying in touch with a support group, making sure that I go to my support group meetings also every week, making sure I don't, you know, if I can't, unless I'm traveling, I don't miss them. You know, just sticking with the basics. I think taking time for self-care, and as busy as I am, I have to find time to rest every now and then, which is something I struggle with, to be honest with you. I think going to the gym and exercise and eating healthy and taking care of myself is another habit that leads me to success. And it, you know, the gym is a great metaphor for life, that the more consistent effort that you put into the gym, the more results that you'll see. So I've always loved that. And I love, no matter what, all else fails, I know I can at least make progress in the gym if I'm not making progress anywhere else in life. So I've always liked that. But you know, off the top of my head, I think that's it. It's tough. It kind of feels like I'm always diving into new things, man. And maybe that's a habit. Maybe that's a habit for me. I'm constantly diving into new things and trying new things out, which is kind of an anti-habit, I guess. I would say.
Yeah, I got you.
But it's also a habit of trying new things, and it's just a new way of making myself uncomfortable. So I have the habit of making myself uncomfortable, if that makes any sense.
Well, it's definitely good to get out of your comfort zone and really stick with the basics, which seems to be the theme of Blake's habits. I do want to ask you about the recovery habit, though, because, I mean, based on this interview, it's like it sounds like you're a changed person. It sounds like these issues are in the past. And I feel like there are people who'll be like, you know, if you're fine, you don't have to do the recovery anymore because you've recovered. So why do you still feel like that's a valuable enough experience for you to keep on making the time, except when you have to travel, to keep showing up?
Part of that might be fear. You know, part of it might be fear that has been instilled in me that if you stop doing these things, you start slipping back into old patterns and habits, and that may or may not be true. But it's also the kind of the belief of that if it's not broke, then why should I change it? If it's working for me, I have no reason to stop doing it.
Right.
And do you know anybody who's in recovery?
Not that I know of.
So I guess the way to explain it, like early on in your recovery, you're like Ricky Bobby in Talladega Nights. It's like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like you're kind of lost at what to do with yourself. You're relearning how to live your life. And it's hard at first. And you have to be really reliant on other people. And you're going through these like major ups and downs. But eventually that sort of stabilizes and you reach a state of homeostasis and the rooms are no longer, you're no longer there from a place of desperation because you have to be there in support groups or in the therapy. You're almost there for more of a maintenance and a sense of community. And it brings me back to what I'm saying before is that I go to my meetings because I feel like I belong there. I'm around like-minded people that love me and know the real me and accept me for who I am and don't judge me. It's a very non-judgmental place because we've all been in the trenches and now we've climbed our way out. So we get each other.
And again, I speak as someone who has not had any of these experiences. So it's good to know why, because I do feel like some people would like, they think they're done and they leave. Some people, you know, they leave and they don't get addicted again. Other people, they leave and they're back to square one. So I think if it's not broke, why?
It was, and it may have been Brené Brown, but she talked about everybody needs to find their tribe. And alcoholics and addicts are my tribe. You know, those are my people. Those are the people that I relate to. I feel more comfortable and more at home in an AA meeting than I do in my parents' house. And it's just because that's my tribe. Those are my people. And everybody needs their tribe, whether they're in recovery, whatever it may be, everybody needs a group of people that they can just be completely open and naked with. Not actually naked though. Don't get naked.
On that note, if you guys want to continue following Blake's work, he's got his book, I Love You More, Short Stories of Addiction, Recovery, and Loss from the Family's Perspective. So definitely grab your copy of that book, which will be in the show notes. Blake, is there any other places we could go to find you?
Yeah, go to I'm on Facebook. You can go to at Blake Cohen Author, or just go follow me on my personal Facebook page, Blake E. Cohen. I'm on Instagram at Blake Evan C, I believe is my name on there. And I'm on Twitter, but I'll never use it. So don't go on there.
Blake, thank you for sharing those resources with us. Breakthrough Success, if you guys want to figure out how can I grow my podcast, virtual summits, books, training courses, webinars, funnels, I help with that through coaching. So if you guys want any info on that and a free strategy call, you can head over to markaberry.com/strategy. But once again, Blake, I mean, really awesome stuff, really raw, real interview. You got super vulnerable on us. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on Breakthrough Success.
It's my pleasure. And I just remembered, of course, go to my website, blakeevancohen.com. I am available for speaking gigs. For at corporate events, town hall events, any type of event, I am available to travel nationally for speaking engagements.
Definitely check that out. That will be in the show notes as well. Thank you again, Blake, for being on the show.
Thank you, brother.